Blog Talk Radio.
The year, 1888. The place? London's East End. Dead and mutilated bodies are popping up all over, from Stamford to Whitechapel. Jack the Ripper is leaving his mark, and the city's on edge. Yvonne Mason is back with a tale of murder and millinery. The Rhodes Hat Factory is booming while the body count rises. Why now? How are these hats connected? Has the Hatter gone mad? Mad Hatter, Yvonne Mason. Available now on Amazon.com.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that was a shameless plug from my historical fiction, The Mad Hatter, set in 1888 in the East End of London. And for you history buffs, you know what happened during that time period. So go check it out. I have to tell you, I get to where I look forward to this particular show with this particular guest, because I am seeing some results with people that before could not carry on a discourse. They could not debate. They could not have a conversation and have a difference of opinion without A, getting on the defensive, B, name calling, especially during this election year, C, just being children. I mean, when you're children, you kick sand in somebody's face when you have a difference of opinion. As adults, we're supposed to be able to be open-minded enough to listen. Even if we agree to disagree, at least have the courtesy to listen, because you never know what you're going to learn. And my guest and I, who I've had on here twice before, it is a weekly thing, we have a lot of fun. We make people think. His name is Floyd Potts. He is a radio host. He is also an author. And he also teaches people how to help themselves. That's what his show is about. It is also on Blog Talk Radio. And he teaches people how to deal with every aspect of the human existence. On his show, he endeavors to motivate people to be the best they can be, and he also has an array of guests on his show, from ministers to entertainers to political figures, you name it, Floyd's had them. He's a native New Yorker, but don't let that fool you. He is a true Southerner. He was raised in Augusta, Georgia. So he is, to me, a brother by another mother, because he is a true Southern gentleman. His experience and life travels are as vast as his extensive knowledge and wisdom and caring and open-mindedness. He is a veteran, and for that I thank him for his service very much. He was with the Air Force. He served in the United Kingdom and in South Korea. And because he has traveled all over the world, he has been able to get a more firm grasp on the different cultures inside the United States as well as outside. So with that perspective, Floyd tries to see things from a different perspective of another person. His main mission has and always will be information, education, and emancipation from self-inflicted hindrances. And ladies and gentlemen, one of the worst self-inflicted hindrances we can have is a closed mind. Because when we have a closed mind, we do not gain knowledge. When we do not gain knowledge, we do not gain wisdom. When we do not gain knowledge nor wisdom, we have no power. Good evening, Floyd. Am I right?
You sure are, my sister. And thank you, thank you, thank you again, my sister, for having me on here. I tell you, you know, Yvonne, I love your perspective and the way you word things there, talking about a closed mind. I'm just really thankful to always, you know, speak with people like you who understand that the only way we all learn is we can't be afraid to be wrong. We can't be afraid to be wrong.
No, and we can't live in a vacuum, because when we live in a vacuum, we become And I use this word figuratively as well as literal, because I have a brother who carries this, has carried this label for years and years and years. But in reality, we all are in some form. We become retarded in our social growth, in our emotional growth, in our intellectual growth, in our spiritual growth, and in our knowledge growth.
We have our corners. We have our corners. I agree with you. We have our corners that we, each and every one of us has a corner that we hang out in our mind. You know,
mm-hmm.
It's a corner in our mind. I'll use this word. It's a hood in our mind. Each and every one of us has a hood in our mind. And this is where we hang out at, and the people we hang out around, this is how they talk, and this is the level of their knowledge, and they don't want to go beyond that knowledge, and sometimes we don't either. So as a result, you know, and that's why as a result, we stay in a certain place, and that's why I was saying I love the way your intro, the way you spoke, and thank you, by the way, for the words you attributed to me. I thank you very much for that. But I love the way your intro, that you say it in a way that the intro itself, in those few minutes, it opens up, in my opinion, the hearts and minds of individuals when they think of that and say, you know what, we've got to get out of our own hood, which is that is trapped in our mind that keeps us trapped in a certain way of thinking, and we live and we die. Our body may travel around the world sometimes, but our mind, because we didn't allow our mind to travel, we might as well have just stayed in the home. We might as well have just stayed home, because we didn't go anywhere. We didn't grow. We didn't learn anything. We sought to go where we went and take the little bit we know and try to tell where we're going. Those people, here's what I know, and here's the deal, and that's that. Let me head back home.
Yeah, and the sad part is, and in doing that, we can't even get out of our own damn way, as a now deceased friend of mine used to say. We are so stuck, as you say, in the hood that we cannot get out of our own damn way.
Mm. And we start blocking other people, too. You know what
yes,
I mean? It's like, Yvonne, it's like some years ago in New York, I believe it was in the 80s, and from that I learned, when I used to be a clubber, I learned never to go in a club where there's one way in and one way out. They had a club in the Bronx. It was a Latino club, and they had a fire. 82 people died because there was one way in and one way out, and one person was at the front and basically got in his own way. And because sometimes you can be in your own way, you end up in someone else's way as well.
Exactly.
You end up in someone else's way as well. And I expand on that, what I mean by that, just piggybacking on what you said in your intro. We get in our own way, and we wind up holding someone else up as well, because our thinking, we transfer it to our children, we transfer it to our friends, and if you are alpha male, if you are alpha female, you have the tendency of being very strong about that opinion, and other people end up getting fixated on something that we believe that may not even be true. And we stand in our way, and as a result, we hinder them as well. Even after we're gone, we hinder generations. We hinder generations.
Because and what happens with it becoming generational, we become comfortable in that state of mind and refuse to educate ourselves, because we're afraid that if we educate ourselves, then we have insulted our ancestors, which is not a true statement. Our ancestors knew what they knew at the time.
Right.
And it's not right or wrong. That's what they knew.
That's what they knew.
But if we expect to grow mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, we have to be willing to expand on the knowledge and wisdom that our ancestors left us.
Right. And go from there. Go from there.
And so, with that being said, you remember that video that we saw the other day that we had a discussion on about scared
straight? I sure do. I got it written down. Sure do.
Great minds run together.
I got it written down, scared straight.
Ladies and gentlemen, for those of y'all that don't know, there was a video And it was a video that a sheriff in a small county in Georgia, God love this sheriff, he's trying to save the children of this county, because whether you know it or not, ladies and gentlemen, our children are our future. And without our children, we have no future. And whatever our children do becomes our future, good, bad, or indifferent. So this sheriff, children who, A, did not want to listen to their parents, B, had gotten in trouble and was headed down a dead-end road, he fingerprinted them. He put them in the striped uniform. He handcuffed them, and he put their butts in jail with hardened criminals. Now, there was some blowback from some of the more liberal-minded folks out there who don't understand that sometimes with a strong-willed child, you have to take strong-willed action. That is all they understand. And I will be the first to tell you, I had my own daughter locked up for 30 days. My own daughter. I took my daughter's children, and I had the evidence to keep her happy ass in prison. And it gave her a wake-up call. So before our listening audience gets their panties in a wad and say, you can't do that, it hurts the child, my statement to that is bullshit. Would you rather put that child in a controlled environment for a day or even a couple of hours, or have that child in a controlled environment for the rest of their life? I'll let you answer that one, Mr. Floyd.
Awesome. I'm glad you brought me on. By the way, I want to let you know, I did talk with your daughter. You didn't know I had gotten the number. She had reached out to me. And I did talk to her, and she told me about that time. And she said when she's still looking for you. She said you guys haven't spoken in about 30 years. But she says she's still looking for you to have you locked up for 30 days.
Yeah, right.
You're looking for some payback. But no.
Yeah.
So I look at it like this, Yvonne. I remember when Scared Straight came out initially in the 70s, and it started at Rahway State Prison in New Jersey, and they had the young adults there. And, you know, naturally the design of it is to place the fear of God, so to say, in these young adults that they would change their ways. I the only issue I have with it is this. I think, number one, everything must start in the home. Yes, we know we can raise our children a certain way. And I know you use that word, a strong will. We've got some children that have a strong will. And there's nothing really wrong with a strong will, because I think that determination will get them through life. But we know it must start in the home with parenting and everything. I think it starts, and I think I had put on the when we were all going back and forth on that one clip, my thing, I believe, was that at the end of the day, love, when a child knows they're loved. Now, when they become an adult, that's different. But I think when a child knows that they are loved and everything, then at some point, I think they make a change. This one point I want to make, I think love gets them to make a change at some point. They may still act out. We know that. We've all been the 13 and the 12-year-old. We've been the 14 and the 15-year-old. But I think those programs, the reason why I have an aversion to those programs is because they normally are taking poor white, your low-income black, and your low-income Latinos, and they are being subjected to these programs. Your upper-class white, you and I both know, that have money, their kids act up as well. But they are not subjected to the Scared Straight that we subject your poor whites, your blacks, and your Latinos. We subject them to this horrendous thing that, look, if you don't change, you're going to end up here in prison. Whereas that one that has money, they don't get subjected to it. And I think that fear doesn't work on everybody, especially if you have a strong will person. You know, that fear may make you worse. You know, that fear may make you angry toward the person who placed you in there. That fear may even have you get in a situation when you get in there and you do something in there that causes you to stay in there because you're put in a certain environment. I think the answer must always start in the home with us as parents and as loving parents. And I can say this also, and then I'm going to be quiet and let you come back, because I was a troubled child. I was a troubled child coming up in Brooklyn, New York. I was a troubled child, and my mother had divorced my father when I was 3 years old, and she left him. We were living in the Bronx, and she moved to Brooklyn as a single mom. She worked every day, had two sons, my elder brother and myself. She went to work. Well, she remarried some years later, and I did grow up with a stepdad who was married to my mom for 30-some-odd years. They're both asleep right now. May they rest in peace. I was a troubled youth. Biological father was a career criminal. That was one of the reasons why my mother did leave him. He was born and raised in New York, as I was, in and out of prison. And our 3 years in, 6 years in, my mother never lost contact with him, though, and she never besmirched him to me. I was a troubled youth. I got into all type of trouble, all type of trouble. When I got older, 15, I decided, well, you know what? I'm bigger than my mother. I don't have to listen to her anymore. I don't have to listen to her anymore. If she had put me in a scare straight program, it wouldn't have made a difference because I would have felt like I'm not going to let these men disrespect me. If I end up in prison, then I got to deal with them. That, you know, that's the mindset of some strong-willed people. It wouldn't change them. What changed me was my father got out of prison for the last time when I was 15. I convinced my mother to let me come to Augusta to finish high school because I figured I can come down south here and run all over my country aunt, my mother's elder sister. But what I did not know was that my father, when he got out of prison, my mother convinced him to follow me down here that night. So as I'm there that morning and I'm hanging out with my cousins, I'm getting drunk and I'm doing the drugs and all this, I'm thinking I'm going to have a ball out here with these country bumpkins. That was my thinking then. Later on that night, I hear my cousin say, "Hello, Uncle Joe." And I knew there was only one Uncle Joe. That was my dad. And my dad, through all what he had went through, in and out of prison, me seeing my dad strong, and then his last few days on this earth, me seeing my dad very, very depleted and diminished, sat in front of me and begged me on his deathbed to change my life. I took that to heart because I love my dad, even though he didn't raise me, but I still loved him. It was just like him, and he saw that, and so did my mother. Well, that changed me. 6 months later, my father passed. That was 1977. It was 1977.
And that I want to know: were you looking over my shoulder when I was making my notes? Because you're in my head, and that's frightening. It's kind of scary because you touched on some things that I had written down. One of them was single parents versus two parents, pitting one parent against the other, using a child as a pawn, and making children accountable for their actions. Now, let's go back up to the first one.
Okay.
I agree that single parenting is difficult at best, because that parent is totally responsible for the income of the family, the well-being of the family, plus they have to carve out some time to preserve themselves so they can do all of the above. And I agree that one parent should never pit the other parent against the child or pit, you know, parents should not use the children in a pawn in adult divorces or relationships. Number one, like you, that child has a right to love both parents, no matter how bad they are. And every child wants to know that parent. And your mother was a very wise woman.
She was.
Because she understood that you were going to find your biological father regardless. Even though you loved your stepfather, that need to know was great.
Right.
And I agree that love is the cornerstone of because the Bible does say, train up a child in the way that he will go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Doesn't say anything about when they're young and stupid. It's just when he is old, he will not depart from it. So just because a child has been trained up with that love and the way and the straight and narrow path doesn't mean that as that child is growing that he's going to do it. But he will always fall back on it when he is old.
Exactly.
The Bible tells
exactly.
us that. So that yeah. being said, putting you in a scared straight program might not have worked for you. However,
right.
however, you were put in a scared straight program, but there were no bars because your mother sent your father south to an aunt, and I laugh because your aunt was a strong southern woman who probably would have beat your butt all over Augusta from one end to the other.
Well, see, she's still around, and I still go. I was with her. I went to see her 2 weeks ago. The thing about it, that's why I wanted to come down here, because I had my aunt. I was actually, I had a cousin. Her youngest child was 4 years older than me, a daughter, and then my, her oldest child is, her youngest child, she has two daughters, were both older than me, and then her son, my cousin Ronnie, who's 9 years older than me, who was, he was an athlete, but I wasn't afraid of them. That's why I said the scare straight wouldn't have worked for me, and there are a lot of people. Like I, you know, now like I was then in terms of was not scared, was strong-willed. You were not going to put that fear in me. That fear that you were trying to put in me actually would motivate me to be worse. So the aunt, but hear me out, right? Aunt, one time she did try to break the switch out. She did try to break the switch out, right? I reminded her, my mother stopped beating me a long time ago. Even in the high school down here, the guy tried to bring the paddle out. I said, you kid, I'm not Southern, I'm up north. You say I'm going to stay here and let you beat me with a paddle? I'm not a slave. I ran all that, see? All that work until my father. And keep in mind, I knew my father growing up. When he got out of prison, my mother, because of love, allowed him to, you know, we would go spend time with him. He'd only be out for maybe 6 months, and he would go back in. 6 months. But she allowed us to spend that time. And the thing about it, because he spent all, and you were right in that, I did go through a scare straight because scare straight was brought to me through my father.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Because he had spent all his life in prison. The difference was he didn't bring fear. He brought love. And
he brought respect.
He brought respect. He brought respect, Yvonne. And he helped me understand that there was no big thing in going to prison. There was no good thing. He showed me fitness, and for that reason I've stayed in shape. But he made it clear. He said, son, there's nothing good, not a doggone thing good about being behind bars. He said, you see men rape. You see men kill men over another man. I remember being 8, 9 years old, and he was sharing this with my brother and I. He never glorified prison. He never glorified it. And then my mother, she could have easily spoke bad about him, say, your father's no good. You're just like him. Like a lot of parents do today. She never did that.
Yes. And to me that is wrong. When my children's father and I divorced years ago, I never talked bad about him. They saw the abuse. They grew up in the abuse, but I never talked bad about him. I allowed those children to make up their own mind because irregardless of his and my relationship, they were entitled to that relationship with their father. The only thing that I told my children was the first time a man ever lays a hand on, I was talking to my girls, the first time a man ever lays a hand on you, I'll kill him. And I told my son, the first time you ever lay a hand on a woman, I'll beat you to a bloody pulp. Because you grew up seeing it. So you will respect and you will get respect. But I never put their father down because that was not my job. Just like, and your mother, when she allowed you to come to Georgia, she already had it in her mind that she was going to send the cavalry in.
Amen.
So you thought you were getting away with something, but mamas are smart.
especially those country mamas, because given the fact I was a New Yorker and I had a country mama in New York, I just knew when I got 15, I could outsmart her too. You know, and the funny thing is my father, because he was from New York and his father was from New York, he thought he could outsmart my mother too. And in the end, she was able to not use him, but she was able to maintain that relationship with him, away from him, to the extent that she made it clear to me as well that you may think that I don't know what's going on because I'm from the country, but trust me, I know a lot more than you think I know.
Yeah, because the same type of stuff goes on in the country that goes on in the city. It's just not in your face, not you literally,
exactly.
But it's just not in your face like it is in the city, because in the country, it's hidden. It's not for polite company, as they used to say.
Yeah, exactly.
So, you were scared straight,
Hello,
but in a different way. So,
in a different way.
And so we're back to as you and I are wont to do. We're back to full circle. If there comes a time. And it's not just for a strong-willed child. I'm a strong-willed child. God, I don't know how my mother got me raised without killing me. And I don't want a strong-willed child's spirit broken. To me, that is the worst thing you can do to another human being, is to break their spirit. But
right. There
has to be, if a child keeps going down that dark path, there has to be at some point some kind of intervention program. If it's not scaring them straight in a jail cell, it has to be something like with your mom. Okay, you go on down to your aunt's house in Georgia, and you go down there and you think you're going to run all over your aunt and you think you got it made. Boy, you just don't know. Mama's got something up her sleeve.
Mm. Yes.
So there has to be some type of stopping that runaway train, because when we love our children, we will do anything humanly possible to keep them out of the middle of that road, to keep from being hit by that car.
There's a void, Yvonne. And that's why these children, whether it's a white child, black child, Latino child, and I say that, man, I'm talking about those who do not have money, because we know the ones who have money are treated, they're handled differently. But those who do not have the finances, I think it's a void. And in my case, the void was, yes, I had a stepdad, and I loved my stepdad, but I loved my dad more. To me, my dad, you know, given the fact I was a New Yorker, my dad was a New Yorker, when I saw my dad, my dad was a drug dealer. I'll just be honest. He was a drug dealer. So he had a lot of money when he was out. And for
mm-hmm.
me, at that particular time frame, you know, my dad, he was into fitness, but he was putting things in his body that took him out of here early. So I admired my dad, but when my dad went away, there was a voice. When my dad, I heard my dad was home 2-3 years later. My dad is home. You know, go spend time with my daddy. Now my dad is back. There was a void there. So I think, with all of these children, there's a void there. And what happens is, and I always preface it by saying, no, I'm not a psychologist, but I've lived life. There's a void there. There's something that's missing. And a lot of times we think because we're old school. America, keep in mind, America was built on slavery. And in that, you had a lot of originally your black community being whipped. But white folks were being whipped as well. They were being whipped because we know also it's a biblical country, and spare the rod is everybody, don't spare the rod. So we tend to think that the way to reach a child is always through something that's disciplinary. You know, that, well, let's find out why the child is acting out. You know, There's something missing there. But, you know, Yvonne, we ask that question. We say, well, let's find out what's wrong. And because we don't get it within the first month, oh, let me go get a belt. Let me go get a switch. If that doesn't work, let me put them in a boot camp. And all we're doing, there's a scar there. There's a scar there, whether it's spiritual, whether it's emotional, whether it's mental, there's a scar there. And by putting them through all this traumatic stuff, all we're doing is continue to pick that scab, and it never heals. And when they become a man, when they become a woman, they are messed up, Yvonne. They are messed up because we never got to the root.
And I agree that we have, you have to get to the root of the problem. And granted, we're talking about the poor demographic of the country, but on the flip side of that, there are, you know, the old saying, poor little rich kid, there are children that come out of affluent families that have that void as well. And could it be that the void that the parents are too busy being social butterflies, too busy punting their children off to boarding school, too busy doing other things rather than being there for that child? Even when they're there with the child, they're not there with the child.
They're not there with them, and that child grows up numb. I give an example. Naturally, neither one of us was alive during his time frame, but I remember reading a story about Henry Ford, you know, and Henry Ford's son. And all his son ever really wanted, if you read the story, was to be loved. But the father was so doggone hard on him, he didn't realize there was a void there. That void was my dad was, and everybody knew my dad, and my dad is this great industrialized thinker. And my dad is putting together this assembly line, but my dad is never there for me. And the dad thought, well, the way to be there for you is I'll put you through the best schools. I'll put you through this and that. I don't have to show you love. That's not something men do. And then it wasn't until the son, years later, got cancer. And then when Henry Ford found out, he was astonished. As a matter of fact, he didn't believe it. He was so removed from his son, he thought, he missed it. He thought, well, this is the way my son is trying to get my attention. Hello, Dad. That's what he's been trying to do all his life. But now he's dying, and he didn't believe it until the son died, and that's what broke him toward the end. That's what broke him, because he realized, man, you know, I've got all this wealth, but I missed it.
There's not enough money in the world to buy love.
You can't buy it.
Not self-love, not love for another human being. And on the flip side of that, Floyd, let's go back to the lower income poverty level spectrum. A lot of these children, especially in the black community, who are they raised by? They're raised by their grandmother.
The grandmother.
They're not raised by a parent. And like you, you loved your father. You wanted to be with your father. These children want to be with one or both parents. Most of the time, maybe they don't even know who their biological father is, or maybe their mother is on a street corner somewhere or in a flop house somewhere. And there's that void again. Yes, it's not that they don't love their grandmother. Ray Lewis said that when he got drafted, and he was in Atlanta one time, and he got in trouble, his grandmother came to Atlanta, and she ripped into him. He said, I was a big old bad lineman. I wasn't afraid of anybody. She walked in the door, and I became a shriveling five-year-old again. But there's still that void of, like you say, something is missing, and it is because we as a nation have forgotten how to have a family unit.
Right. It's not promoted.
We're out of balance.
Yep. Not promoted.
Right.
Not promoted. Not promoted. And you know the sad thing?
No, tell me the sad thing.
You know, I got to throw a political moment in there.
Go right ahead. That's why we had this conversation, you and I.
Exactly. We just elected a man who doesn't display family values either.
Well,
doesn't display family values either.
That can be thought of two ways, because...
Okay. Okay.
A lawyer friend of his made the statement that if you want to see the mettle of a man, look at his children. And even his children have said that their father was always there for him. And I've read his books, and he said it didn't matter how busy his day was. at night when he went home to his children, he was at home with his children. Now, yeah, he's been married 3 times, so have I, but that doesn't mean I lost my children in the fray that I wasn't there for them. For whatever reason, the relationships didn't work. But he always maintained a relationship with his children. Even Tiffany in California, she says, my dad and I always had a relationship. So, again, like your mom, his ex-wives did not disparage him with the children. They were allowed to love their father. Granted, he's got some baggage. We all do. The problem that I have, not on the political spectrum, but when I see the little children in Fort Pierce,
okay,
and they're 8, 9, 10 years old, and they're carrying around a loaded Glock that has been stolen, and they don't mind shooting it. They have become bag men for the local gang. And when they get busted, they're asked, why? Why do you feel like you have to be in this gang? And without fail, every one of them say, because that is my family. That's where I am loved. Because in their little minds, when they have to go out and pick up a load of money, or they have to go out and deliver dope, or they have to go out and get the local prostitute for the nearest John, or they have to go and steal something to be in this gang, they're loved. Floyd, that's a problem.
You just proved my point. There's a void. It's once again, there's a void. They see the gang as loving them because why? The person at home doesn't love them. I want to go back to what you were saying about the father may not know the father, and then the and we're going to say, because we did mention little black kids, and then naturally I said it as a man of color, and then the mother may be on the corner. I want to say this: the mother may be earning 6 figures.
She may be.
But, and I'm gonna tie this into Trump as well, but the mother does not have time to be a mother. I'm making my money. I've got to get my Michael Kors bag. I've got to get my Mercedes Benz. I've got a house here with 6 bedrooms. What else do I have to give you? I've got you the newest Jordans. I've got you all the Xboxes. I've got you the iPhone. I've got you the iPad. I got you all of that. What else do you want? What else do you want? I want love.
I want my parent.
I want my
my daughter, my youngest daughter, is married to a nice young man who has 2 children. The youngest one doesn't even know his biological mother. The oldest one knows her, but doesn't call her mother. And the reason being is because she's been in and out of jail for drugs ever since before they were born.
Okay.
They love my daughter. They love Samantha. The little one will tell you, Samantha's his mother. But because of the unintended consequences, even as little as he was when she left, the unintended consequences is it doesn't matter that he was 4, 5, 6 months old when she left and she kept popping in and out. He now has anxiety and behavioral issues and issues of abandonment that my daughter is having to address because of what his biological mother did. And what people don't understand is when they are selfish and they bring children, I don't care if they're white, brown, green, purple, yellow, it doesn't matter. When someone brings a child into this world and someone helps perpetrate that action because none of us are Mary, and it always takes two, it is that person's responsibility for that human life to take care of it. And what one of the things, and we're back on another one of my soapboxes, which I'll probably get my throat slit for in a figurative way, we're back to that thing of we don't have to be responsible for anything or anybody. It's all about me and what I want and what I need. And so what if I've got four or five children running around? I don't have to look after them. A, the state will look after them. So that puts them into foster care. Well, they're not treated very kindly in foster care, and most of the foster care providers are in it for the money. Our grandma has to raise them, and grandma's already worn out because she's already raised her brood and she needs a rest, or they become gang children. We've lost our direction, Floyd, of responsibility, love, and accountability. Do you agree with that?
Well, I think that I would say that some have. We've always been a different type of country. I'm gonna piggyback on what you said, and I'm gonna go back to Trump, taking what you just said. We said earlier that, you know, with Donald Trump, I said this one, in my opinion, does not display family values. And I know you were saying, and this is going to, I'm going to tie in accountability as well. And then you were saying that where his children say he was always there, they always had a relationship with him. There are different types of relationships.
There's I agree.
A healthy relationship. There's a healthy relationship, and then there's a relationship that can be toxic. There's a relationship that does not teach reality, but it teaches a almost like a superiority complex. There's one that teaches an inferiority complex and everything. I think in the superiority complex, it teaches where, no, there is no accountability. I agree with you on that. There is no accountability because, number one, with that superiority complex, there's also a level of and feeling entitled. No matter what I do, no matter what I say, you know, that I'm entitled to something because, well, I contribute this more than you. I give an example. We do this with immigrants. I'm going to come back. We do this with immigrants. If it's an immigrant who illegally, however, they're a scientist, they're treated differently than the one who comes here illegally and may end up being a janitor. They're both here illegally, but one is seen different. I think that's how we have always been in this country. That a certain level of accountability has never applied if you're the privileged. Now, if you're not that, if you're that low income, I'll go again, that low income, black, white, Latino, then there's a different type of rule for you. There's a different type of rule for you versus that one who is deemed affluent or deemed, okay, well, they're a scientist or Oppenheimer or someone like that can what we believe contribute more. So though they should be subjected to the same scrutinization as the one who is not a scientist, the same level of accountability is not there. It's not there. I think our children, and we said it, and I think we agreed in that at the end of the day, I think that the difference is love there, you know, is love there. Yeah, I look at a Donald Trump, soon to be President Trump in January, and then at that point I will call him President Trump for the year that he'll be president. I'm making a prediction there for the year he'll be president because I think he's going to quit, but that's another show.
See, ladies and gentlemen, this is what Floyd and I can do. There will be a test later, ladies and gentlemen. There will be a test on how well you all paid attention to Floyd and I being able to have differences of opinion and throwing zingers out there, and neither one of us are offended.
We throw the zing out there.
Right, because we're friends and we don't care. Because
we don't
at the end
care,
of the day,
I mean?
friendship, friendship trumps anything else.
Disagreement every time. We can agree to disagree and respect one another, because even in the disagreement, when I disagree with you, it sends me to the research table. It sends
exactly.
me to the research table. You know what I mean? Because I know my disagreement must be on fact. It cannot be on emotion. Oh, I don't agree with Yvonne because, well, why don't I agree with her? Well, because I just don't agree. I say to myself, no. I've got to have a fact tied to that disagreement, not just emotion, or just as we said earlier, because the way my ancestors came up a certain way and a certain level of thinking, or your ancestors, so I've got to stick to that. No. There's new information available. They had, as we said earlier, they had a certain set of information, and they had to work with that information. I get to work with my information now, you know?
And our children will get to work with their information.
With their information, you know? I think that our value system, each and every one of us, because so many of us are chasing money in some levels, we leave our children behind. In some cases, yeah, we know we have some parents who do not raise their children at all. We know we have some single parents that do well. I'm a single dad, and my ex-wife is flying down here tomorrow morning. I've got to pick up. We're going to Alabama State. Our son graduates from Alabama State tomorrow. Now, he grew up down here with me. Dad raised him. However, my mom was here, and she passed away last year. She helped me. She did help me. Now, she didn't have to raise him. I didn't leave him there and say, Mom, no. I had my two sons when I came here 12 years ago, but I'm thankful to God that my mother was still alive and my stepdad for a while there. And so I was able to still piggyback off of her love. They were able to get that love as well. And as a result, they have not been in trouble. They came up with a single dad of all things, but they have not been in trouble because they had love for me. They had love from their grandmother. And then when they spent Christmas and summers with their mom up in Philadelphia, they had love there. And I believe it's because at the end of the day, now, did they get in trouble from time to time? They did, but then they felt disappointed. They felt
right.
disappointed. I mean, they felt like they disappointed me because they knew, okay, having a single parent, a single dad at that, and me raising men, me being a man, they knew, and I always told them, and I still tell them, I said, your example is me. I'm your example. And if I'm doing wrong, then I'm showing you wrong. But if you see me going out here doing right, you see me pounding the curb, you see me with a blog talk, you see me writing books, you see me struggling, but you see me never giving up, that's your example. And in that, they see the love, they experience the love, and through struggle, love grows, and we understand, okay, we have to move forward, not let's get in trouble, and then now dad sends me off to Scared Straight or sends me off to a boot camp and expects another man. They came out of my loins, not another man's loins. So I've got to be the one, and if it's the mother, is a single mother, they came out of her womb. She's got to be the one, or the man's got to be the one. Or if the parents can be together, then they have got to be the ones, and they have to be the ones to deal with their children even when their children are bad. Because like we said, the Bible says, in the end, because they see a certain example, not just hear it going to church, because that's the problem. Too many people church game, but they don't live the doggone game.
Right.
Children go by what they see. And if they see mom praying at night, they see dad praying, they see dad struggling, they see dad not with a whole lot of women coming in and out, breaking up with one or with the next, but they see dad in a relationship long term, and if it doesn't work, they see dad step and sit to the side for a while and heal, and then talk about stability, and then see dad maybe down the road again in a solid relationship and remarry. They look and say, well, maybe there's something to this Bible thing, because I see a dad going through struggle, as the Bible said there's going to be some struggle, and I see a dad living a certain way, and at the end, that's what we talked about. When they get older, they are like the prodigal son. They come to themselves.
And let's go back to what you were talking about earlier. Yes, you had your support group. You had your mom. You had your stepfather. You, though, were the primary caregiver of your children.
Right.
And you shared that responsibility with your wife, even though she was long distance. Sadly, there are children out there who don't have that safety net. Their primary caregiver is grandma or a foster care provider. And
because the mother and the father abdicate their authority. They
exactly. And when mom or dad decides to come in out of the cold and blows through, yeah, they might have $500 they got in nefarious ways, and the child sees that, and the child's saying, oh, there's my mom and my dad. I love my mom and my dad, and they've got all this money, and grandma's going, oh, gee, now I've got to take and redirect this child's thinking. It's going to take me a month to get them settled back down. To me, that's worse than them just staying away. See, you were grounded.
I agree.
When you were coming up, your mother grounded you. You knew that your dad would come in and out of prison, and you knew that your dad flashed money and dealt in drugs. But you were grounded in the fact that, from what I'm getting from this conversation, that he would go away again, but your mom didn't have to go back and rebuild the foundation because it was already a firm foundation.
That is correct. And I had, and the thing about it, I had my mom and I had my stepdad, and the thing I liked about my stepdad, what I learned from him, was he was not intimidated by my dad, because when my dad came out, there were times the two of them went and sat and had a drink together and everything, and my dad had never tried to intimidate him, but he understood that those, yes, these are my biological seed, and I thank you that you guys allow me to spend time with them, but I also understand that our foundation, as you said, is rooted in the teachings that my mother and my stepdad, primarily my mother, because I was a strong mother, but that was her husband more so than my stepdad, let's put it that way, but the teachings of her, they dominated everything else.
So,
and
again,
she was
with
a narcissistic woman, but they just dominated because of love. She dominated
because of love, and because she had a firm foundation. Ergo,
correct.
When you got grown and had children of your own, even though you divorced their mother, your children were raised with a firm foundation.
That's
so
correct.
Your children didn't have to depend on your mom, your mom and your stepfather, their grandparents, for that need of love and discipline and respect and a little fear thrown in, because, face it, we all fear our parents once in a while, because they had you as their primary source of example.
Exactly.
And children that get, let's just face it, And whether they're rich or poor, sometimes it happens regardless, because children that don't have that foundation of a parent's love and a parent's discipline and a parent's respect, they're the ones that get lost in the fray.
I agree. Because that's
and
key.
We lose our future. Those very same inner city kids might be the next rocket scientist, or might find a cure for asthma or leukemia or Parkinson's. Those very same children that wind up on the slab in the city morgue. I would rather have my child sitting in a county jail for, well, back to that, sitting in a county jail for 2 hours than on a slab in the morgue.
I agree, and that, and yeah, I agree in an instance. Then the dog won more. I agree.
But you can't get that child back.
You can't get them back. There's no way. There's nothing at that point. There's nothing, and that's what I was saying earlier about that situation that I read about with Henry Ford. Even though that son lived, I think, to maybe in his 60s, once he passed, that void, he still left here. He left here a broken man, because all he wanted was for his dad, even as his dad was in his 80s and still not understanding that all I want, Dad, is your love. And that's why I make sure that with my sons, and a lot of men don't do this with their sons. They'll do this with their daughters, but they don't do this with their sons. I tell my sons every day that I love them. You know, they're grown men. They need to hear a man, the man whose loins they came out of, tell them I love them, and they also need to see that the parent means that.
Exactly.
You need to see they mean that. They mean that and mean that by, well, you may be low on money and the child needs something and you need something. You say, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and get this to my child, and I'll go ahead and hold off. Then maybe the next week when my finances are stronger, I can hold off a week. And then you don't tell a child of the sacrifice, oh, I'm making the sacrifice for you. Because to me, that's not love either. That's guilt.
That's guilt.
It's guilt. And I'm going to say something that I know a lot of people disagree with me. A cousin of mine said it to me years ago. Our children don't owe us anything because they didn't ask to be brought into this world. We brought them into the doggone world. So
amen.
We owe them. We're obligated to them. And I think that's where the accountability, going back to what you were saying earlier, if we've missed accountability, if we've lost it, I think that's where it has been lost, that we fail to realize we owe them. You know, they don't owe us. It's like we're saying about that parent that pops in for 5 minutes with $500 and grandma doing all the work. And then that same child ends up growing up to be that rocket scientist. That famous scientist comes that doggone deadbeat dad or deadbeat mom want to show up now. You know,
yep.
You want to show up now and brag about, oh, that's my baby. Yeah, that's your baby, but that's not your man or your woman.
Exactly.
That's grandma's man or woman. Grandma raised that man. Grandma raised that woman. You didn't. You stepped away. But now you want to show up because the table's set, and you expect them, and then you're disappointed when you see there's a table for eight, and you're the ninth person. There's no place for you.
And
you
that's because you were not.
You didn't help cook
not the meal? You, but that person was not accountable nor responsible
right.
for the life they brought into this world. And nobody held a gun to their head to make them do it.
Nobody.
We are about
they
to
advocated.
Run out of time, my dear friend.
I know.
In 30 seconds, wrap it up.
I think, you know, that at the end of the day, we both made good points in that love and both accountability. And I think they're tied together. I think they're tied together, Yvonne, that when we love, we are accountable. And when we love, we're not afraid to be accountable and everything. If we bring a child into this world, then regardless of our financial status, if we're struggling, well, we brought that child into this world struggling, then doggone it, we have to do what we've got to do to feed that child, but more importantly, let that child know we love that child and we want the best for that child, and we show that child that each and every day, and never try to make that child feel guilty, like, well, you owe me because I'm doing this for you. No, 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 Dad. No, 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 Mom. You brought me into this world. I didn't have a choice.
Now,
choice.
I'm going to go against my own cutoff date.
Uh-oh.
I'm bringing you back on the 22nd.
The 22nd.
If you got something going, let me know. We'll bump it up till after Christmas. But you know you're a weekly thing now. People look for you, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain.
Okay.
This is your host Yvonne Mason and my brother by another mother, radio host Floyd Potts, who I love him dearly. He is a true Southern gentleman. Tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, CPS activist Jim Black will be my guest. And this show, if you are dealing with CPS, better known as Child Protective Services, you want to listen to this show. And as Floyd and I have been talking about, love yourself, like yourself, respect each other, respect yourself. Love your children. You don't always have to like them, but love your children because they are your future. They are the people that will continue your legacy, whether it be right, wrong, or indifferent. So never forget that. Floyd, thank you, my dear friend, my dear brother, for I always feel invigorated after our hour. I feel like I stood out in the rain in a shower. And you are going to be on my friend Paige Roberts Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. Tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, this is Off the Chain. This is your host, Yvonne Mason, and we will see you then. My dear friend, thank you so much. I enjoyed it, as always.
Thank you, Yvonne. Likewise, my sister. God bless, God bless. And I will talk to you later on in the probably Monday or Tuesday, because I got to get ready to get prepared
for tomorrow's festivities. My young man walks. He walks. I'm proud of him.
Well, give him a big hug from your sister by another mother.
I sure will. I sure will.
And if the 22nd is good for you, let me know. If it's not good for you, then we'll do it the week after Christmas.
Okay, that sounds good. It should be, I don't think there's going to be any challenge to that. That should be a good date, but I'll let you know.
Okay, sweetheart, and I'll talk to you then.
Thank you. God bless. Goodbye.
You too, sweetheart. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.